Good evening. It's Sunday, February 12th. It's an epidemic of violence. This is Bucknology Writers Room. We're going to calm you down. But seriously, what is going on in the NHL tonight? Like, everyone was so angry that the Sharks won 4-1 this morning. Yeah, that everyone else decided, let's just spear people in the face. But anyway, I digress. Last week's show was so jam-packed with content that we couldn't get to everything that we had intended. So on tonight's edition, we are going to discuss trade rumors, movement around the AHL, and open up the viewer mailbag. Plus, Claude Julien was let go by Boston earlier this week, so what's next for both he and the Bruins? The Writers' Room is airing a little bit later than usual because of this evening's San Jose Barracuda game. Also a 4-1 win. Yeah, and we'll discuss what went on with the team this weekend. If there are any other topics that you'd like to discuss with us on tonight's Technology Writers Room and you're watching live on YouTube, post your comments on the Google chat and we'll try to go over them on the air. Plus, if you're listening to our audio stream on iTunes, TuneIn, Google Play, SoundCloud, or Stitcher, go ahead and tweet in your comments to or questions to @Technology on Twitter. Use the hashtag PucknologyWR, and we'll get about them. We'll get to them. I will not screw this up. We'll talk about them on the next show. Tonight, on tonight's show, is Zach the Bear, Zach Devine.
Hello, everyone. How is everyone out there doing?
Winning.
they put the, I think the California jerseys were really just like were an ode to you.
You know, I mean, they had a bear patch on them, so how could they possibly be bad, right?
Right. No, exactly. I think they had to like add the California stuff just to throw people off.
And the one screwing up the intro is @KevinLacey22. That's me.
Got my number third.
I'm gonna have a new one the next show. I swear.
I'm gonna have a new one the next show. I'm gonna have a first one.
Last but not least, the man you can't get enough of because we're seeing him for the third time this week on a technology show, and not just me, it's your host of the Writers' Room, Ian Reed.
Hey, everybody. Going for the marathon of technology shows. I'm working on the Iron Man streak, which will get broke on Wednesday because if I'm awake and have to do that show, people are getting dick punched. All right. Sorry. I'm going to behave. Look, we got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight, so I'm just going to get right into it, including violence. Violence in the NHL. I don't know why anyone's surprised by this. So, Kevin, break this down for us. What happened tonight?
All right, so I only saw it, a clip that Hockey Jerk showed me earlier, which I would love to actually show you guys. Someone send me the video on Twitter, @KevinLacey22. But Gustav Nyquist speared Jared Spurgeon of the Wild in the face.
In the face.
There's nothing more to it than that. It was not, oh, he meant to stick lift him and he missed and clipped him. He straight up speared a man in the face. That's a huge problem that, of course, ESPN will jump all over because the only time they ever talk about hockey is when there's violence such as this. Also, something happened in the Boston-Montreal game. I did not see that, but apparently Alex Galchenyuk was he the victim or was he the aggressor?
He was the aggressor.
He was the aggressor of also apparently slashing Kevin Miller of the Bruins in the face.
Yeah.
So this is not the Marty McSorley era as far as I'm aware, but oh my Sunday, what the heck just happened?
So the what we know so far is that Nyquist is going to have an in-person hearing. It'd be interesting to see how many games he gets. I think he's going to get more than five. Does he get more than 10? I don't think so. I think the sweet spot's somewhere between 5 and 10. I can't guess the exact number. But I mean, this, you know, it's a brutal play. If you can't, just go on Twitter. Hockey Jerk tweeted it out, so you can kind of go there. I'm sure you've seen it on Twitter at this point. If you probably put in Nyquist in the little Twitter search, you can see the GIF. But yeah, I mean, just a brutal, uncalled for play. I mean, I understand, you know, someone hits you and you get mad, but, you know, trying to make you eat this deck is probably not the best way to go about retaliation. Zach, what did you think of the spear?
It was terrible. There's no two ways around that. And unfortunately, we're all going to have to endure the, well, if we had fighting in the league at a higher clip, that he would be more scared to do stuff like that, or, you know, all those other kind of tired narratives. I think really the takeaway and kind of the thing that annoys me is we've entered this era where physical play has to be retaliated for. And I'm not talking the fighting. I'm not talking, you know, the hits from behind. I mean, it seems like anytime there is solid body contact, and I mean, Nyquist was cross-checked, so I'm not excusing that. But more and more we see that, oh, you hit, you know, it's a big hit. He caught a guy with the head down with a clean hit. Now we've got to fight. And that's the thing that I think overall is lacking or a trend that I'm not a fan of right now.
No, I hate it. I hate the having to answer for a clean hit nonsense. Like, it doesn't make sense. Why should you have to answer for a legal play with an illegal play? The logic just doesn't compute for this Canadian robot at all. And then like Kevin said too, of course, now we're gonna have to hear about, oh, can you take your kid to an NHL game? Which, you know, all the super cocky pacifist, you know, flash media that doesn't really cover hockey, but, you know, we'll cover it when they can make some, you know, statement out of it. We're going to have to hear from them too, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, go from this nice story this morning of Joe Thornton invites a very young Sharks fan and his dad down to the locker room after they win.
Right.
So from that story this morning to guys are getting speared in the face. Like, geez. And I'm going to try and pull up this GIF to show you here.
All right.
And of course, it froze. Oh, God, that's bad. But there will be another replay here. Yeah, let's just, you know, bang.
Oh, that's just rude.
That's your full speed version there. That's just uncalled for.
Yeah, there's no excuse for that nonsense.
Yeah. And then the second one was Galchenyuk's, two-hand, I don't know if it was a home run. I think it was a stand-up double when he swung at Kevin Miller. The stick work stuff, and you know, we're probably gonna have to answer for that as well. What's interesting is you have these players now that are going to be suspended. Both of them were rumored to at least be available during the NHL trade deadline. So does that impact their availability? I mean, if you're interested in them, you've got plenty of viewings, but does it maybe mute their value a little bit? So that's something to just, you know, not to gloss over how terrible those two plays were by Nyquist and Galchenyuk. But you still have to at least wonder it.
Absolutely.
What do you think was even going on in his mind, right? Or either of their minds in that moment?
Angry.
Just rage.
just rage. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, it's a reactionary thing. You know, these guys have been taught since a young age to just react. So to even suggesting, I think, that there was some premeditated malice, you know, something like that.
Yeah, no.
Now,
they lost their cool. They lost control on the situation, and really nasty, unfortunate stuff happened. But
do these guys get off because they're talented players? Like, do they get off on the suspension? Because I still cannot forgive the NHL a couple years ago when Phil Kessel axe swung beloved NHL former NHL player John Scott multiple times, and he got suspended for like two preseason games, and that was it.
If John Scott comes after me in a preseason game, I'm going to try and chop him down too. There's no way if I'm Phil Kessel, I want any piece of that.
But I mean, that was such a wimpy suspension. And so, I mean, I look at what happened tonight between Detroit and Minnesota and Boston and Montreal, and I'm like, these guys are going to end up getting away with it again. I really do. I hope they don't. But
I don't think they're going to get away with it. You know, Galchenyuk, I would set the over-under at 2.5.
Yeah.
Then with Nyquist, I'd probably set it at 6.5. If I was a betting man, which I am, I'd probably take the under on Galchenyuk, and I'd probably take the over on Nyquist.
Yeah.
The thing with Galchenyuk, too, is I think that he's going to be the fortunate thing that's going to work in his favor is he was kind of moving backwards. So, well, I think it would be completely BS to call it that way. He can say that, well, you know, he was moving backwards and the momentum carried his stick up, and he might get off on that excuse.
Mm-hmm. Now, by get off, you mean like he's not suspended?
I think he might get something, but he might not get something worthy of the actual crime. Like, he might be able to plead his case that, yeah, he should be in control of his stick, but he was, you know, he did it as he was kind of falling backwards. And maybe that'll minimize the damage that gets done to him suspension wise.
I'll take that bet.
What I do like, though, is, you know, for the chances of Nyquist getting a reasonable suspension for that, is that the NHL took the time the same day to say there's going to be a hearing rather than waiting a couple days or whatever. Right. Like, I mean, they pretty much immediately were like, all right, you're suspended. You got a hearing. Let's go.
I mean, how can you not at that point though? Right. Yeah. Like, you have to do something. But yeah, we need to move on here.
We do.
On a more somber note, Mike Ilitch passed away. He's the owner of the Detroit Red Wings / Detroit Tigers. Obviously, you know, never want to see anyone pass away. It's, you know, it's a sad day for hockey. It's sad that he isn't going to see that new arena open on opening night.
And did he have a stake in Little Caesars? Not just the arena, but
he's
actually
the
Little
founder
Caesars?
Of Little Caesars.
Yeah, he and his wife opened the first Little Caesars in some little town in Michigan.
Okay.
I forget, but you know, I mean, any kind of story like Mike Ilitch, I mean, you want to talk about a bootstrapped guy who, you know, he wasn't born into money. Everything he got, he worked his butt off for.
Right.
You know, I've read some tweets that were a little disparaging because he used a lot of taxpayer money to build these stadiums. But I'm in the camp that the economic development that these pro teams bring to these, you know, downtowns and to these areas far, far outweigh whatever they're going to pay. I mean, Detroit is nothing right now with professional teams that are bringing people in from the suburbs. You take away the Red Wings, you take away the Tigers, and that town, I mean, doesn't even exist.
The other thing, too, something crazy. So Mike Ilitch bought the Detroit Red Wings in 1982. Do you know how much he paid for the Detroit Red Wings in 1982?
$8 million US, Ian.
That would be correct. $8 million. You want to talk about return on investment? Holy crap.
That is how much Brent Burns will be making next season.
Yes, exactly. For the low price of one Brent Burns, you could have had yourself a Detroit Red Wings in 1982. Now, they weren't that great in 1982.
But I was going to say, would you rather have?
I mean, that's just crazy to think, like, when you bought a team. I mean, I don't know what the team's valued at right now, but it's damn hell of a lot more than $8 million. So, you know, and look, he came in, he put the right people in, and obviously they have the, you know, they had the success to show for it. So, yeah, like I read the disparaging stuff too, and I get it. Look, Detroit's a bankrupt city, so I get some of the anger about it. But at the same time, I mean, to look at what he's done, I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, for me, I don't know. I didn't realize that he was 87 years old. Like, I don't know why I didn't think that, but I guess that Mike Ilitch seemed to have been an owner that was in the spotlight quite a bit, not negatively, just not like it's all about me, like the Raiders owner, for example, you know,
right.
But just, you always heard about Mike Ilitch having a relationship with, you know, his team management, with his players. Like, he was a very hands-on manager, owner, sorry, it seemed like, and in very favorably. And so, I don't know, his passing caught me off guard, just because it was one of those things that he seemed to be just, you know, a regular part of hockey, and with no downtrend in health or anything. I mean, hey, that happens in life.
Oh, for sure.
But, yeah, just very sad. I don't know what's going to happen there with the team, but yeah, they do have that new arena opening up next season. And I got to think that, similarly to what the Sharks did with George Gund III when he passed away, I got to think there's going to be some kind of memorial permanently at Little Caesars Arena next year in Detroit.
And well, there should.
Yeah, absolutely. Claude Julien gets fired by Boston. I almost forgot to put this in because, like, this is one of those things where it's like, today we have like the crazy violence that we can talk about right off the hop, but then sometimes like we do a show and then the next morning big things happen and then we have to like try and backtrack to it. Claude Julien gets fired in Boston. I was kind of surprised, honestly, because I guess I shouldn't say I was surprised, but I mean, he had been fired in the media so many times that I was just kind of like, I'll believe it when I see it, type of thing with Claude Julien. What does Boston go from here? I wonder.
I've been saying it all season. I still don't know what the identity of the Bruins are. And that may have been a problem for Julien right there, is just having this kind of hodgepodge roster. And In one respect, it's like they are going to need a strong leader, because, I mean, Julien is a pretty strong leader for the Bruins, so they're going to need another strong leader to hold things together. But at the same time, I wonder if maybe a brand new coach, you know, like Bruce Cassidy has been a longtime coach, it's just not in the NHL. But maybe they need a new era voice, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Like someone like, oh, who the heck is that guy that they just hired? Maybe they need someone completely off the radar to take the reins, because if the Bruins fail, like I still think they're trending towards, because they don't have an identity, then it just gets blamed on the new coach. Oh, well, they hired this bum coach or whatever, we'll just bring in somebody else. But I don't know. I think the Bruins, it's time for the Bruins to let go of some things, and they're not there yet. But I guess Julien was that first piece.
You know, Ennian spoke about it. You know, Claude Julien's been fired at least 37 times, it feels like, in the last couple years by the media. But really, what's he supposed to do? They've traded away Phil Kessel. They've traded away Tyler Seguin. They've traded away Dougie Hamill. And outside of David Pastrnak, and I think Brandon Carlo is going to be a damn fine player.
Yes.
They've brought nearly nothing back in through the pipeline. You could argue, well, no, definitely Ryan Spooner. You know, now that I'm kind of really reaching back and getting towards my Boston prospects. But, you know, and then you look at what they've done in the last couple drafts, and I think it's very – very polite to say they've gone off board the last outside of maybe Charlie McAvoy at I think it was 14 or 15.
14.
Okay. But Zorbal, DeBrusque, Session, guys, those three picks, you look at, don't, if you're a Bruins fan, don't look who went in the next 10 picks after those three in a row. Just don't. Do it. Yeah, don't do it. Even Trent Frederick, I watched him quite a bit with the program. That was a bit of a reach at 29.
Yeah.
But which was the pick they got in the Martin Jones deal. So at some point, yeah, you got to fire the coach because you can't fire the whole team. But Sweeney's done absolutely no favors for either Claude Julien or his successor. because he's getting a cupboard that has been, I mean, pillaged.
Yeah, and this is a team like in Boston where Don Sweeney's definitely done himself no favors, but this is a team still trying to dig out of the mess that Shirelli put them in, to be completely honest. Like, it wasn't like, you know, Shirelli put them in quite a mess. And now, you know, Sweeney, there's a lot of stuff that Sweeney obviously is going to have to dig out of from that. Like, let's, you know, like Kessel, Seguin, those weren't Don Sweeney trades. Those were Shirelli trades.
And that, and you use the right term there. He had to dig himself out. Cause what's the best thing to do when you're stuck in a hole?
Dig.
Stop digging. And he just made it worse.
He did. Know?
But again, I mean, he's, you know, Julianne's been there for, he was the longest tenured coach, 10 plus years.
Yeah.
So
I just don't know who you replace him with, because I don't know. I mean, last I checked, Mike Babcock isn't available. So I don't know who you replace Craig Julianne with, or Claude Julianne with, sorry.
Well, I mean, and this kind of goes into the Las Vegas discussion, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you have Claude Julianne, who's obviously not in the running for the Boston job. Right. But now with the coaches, with the teams that are looking for coaches, you've got the Blues turned over to Mike Yao. So that mm-hmm. one's out. But Vegas and some of these other teams that, that are looking or could be looking, you're looking at Julianne, you're looking at Hitchcock, Gallant, Capuano, Todd Richards. I mean, there's some really good coaches out there.
Yeah.
That now, if you're thinking about making a move, do you make it now before Vegas brings on, their first coach? Do you bring, get a Gallant before, the other shoe drops for some of these other teams? So this could kind of get exciting here. And I saw two tweets that the Habs have asked about the availability of Julianne.
Yeah, that's where I was.
Surprised me at all.
Yeah, I was going to go there next with that is, it is an embarrassment of riches for the Vegas franchise now with the coaching. But there have been some rumors about Claude Julianne coming back to Montreal and replacing Michel Therrien, because apparently Montreal can only just cycle through the same three coaches over and over and over.
Well, there's a reason for that.
Yeah, well, they are good coaches, though.
Parlay, Usted, Inglés.
And that's right.
Small details. Yes. But Julianne, I got to think Montreal, especially after losing 4-0 on Sunday night to Boston, and the fact that I think it was the last 2 weeks we've seen Jack Capuano fired the day after a writer's room, Claude Julianne fired the day after a writer's room, Michel Therrien, best of luck in your future endeavors tomorrow.
We are the coach killers. Yeah.
Wow, we are.
We really are. Holy crap.
Who knew?
Michel Therrien obviously has been, the fans have been, he's been fired by the fans since forever ago. Would it surprise me to see Therrien gone and Claude Julianne brought in? Not at all. In fact, it's kind of like the perfect timing to do it because, unfortunately in Montreal, if you have a coach that, well, heaven forbid, does not speak French, they're going to debate about it, in the provincial parliament the next day. So, it's that serious. Absolutely. I could see that happening because, Michel Therrien, I don't think he's a good coach, to be honest. And I think that Montreal does kind of need a new person behind that bench because when Carey Price can't be perfect all the time, you see what happens, they lose.
So this kind of gets into a discussion point. Does Vegas almost immediately just start throwing money at one of these coaches to make sure they get their guy?
See, and that's the other thing I think too is I don't know if Vegas can afford Claude Julianne because I've heard that he's going to want like upwards of $3-4 million like some of these other coaches are making.
Yeah, Babcock set the bar super high.
Super high. I mean, the $6 bajillion or whatever it was.
But he also set the ceiling because if Mike Babcock's making that, how do you walk into your team presidents or owner or whoever and say, I'm worth $7 million. I mean, they would just kind of look over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah. No.
And then the other thing, and this might move on to our next topic anyway, is that Vegas, I don't know if they're allowed to hire a coach until they make their final payment on their
They've hired a GM already. They can do all that stuff. They just
That is a good point, actually. Yeah. Okay, on that.
Because that's front office. That has nothing to do with anything.
Exactly. My understanding is that everything can be in place except for players. And this is kind of key signing time, right? For the UDFAs, for the Euros, for the NCAA. This is where you can get some, you know, free talent for your AHL for next year. You can send them back to juniors. You can, there's things that they can be doing right now. That payment, I don't know when they're going to go empty out the slots at Caesars, but they need to get to it.
Yeah. The Knights, I know that the Knights have reportedly spoken with Jer Gallant already. Mm-hmm. And they apparently this week are going to, I don't know if meet, but at least talk with Jack Capuano. Like you guys said, Julian's here now.
Yeah.
So if that's the guy they want. But as far as players go,
The Vegas people that I follow just don't think that the Vegas franchise is willing to fork out $4 or $5 million a year for Claude Julien.
Well, then the other thing of it is, and you usually think of this in terms of players, but if Vegas isn't a good enough team to be a playoff contender, then why would you throw money at Julien for basically wasted years? Because you know how sometimes there's players like, why is this player on the team? He's just being wasted away.
And name me this, and here's another thing about Vegas. I think Vegas is going to have a hard time finding a coach, because name me a coach who started with an expansion team that survived to get another job. Like, I can't think of any coach that coached an expansion team to start off with.
Yeah.
Or lived to coach again.
Boris. Barry Trotz.
Oh, Trotz. Yeah. Okay. So there's Trotz. But Trotz was around forever. I mean, he
doesn't count. He's like
Barry Trotz coached for like a million.
The Nashville
years.
God. He.
Well, and that's what I'm saying.
That's fair.
No, it is.
But I mean, other than that, though, I feel like it's like expansion teams are like a kind of a coaching graveyard.
See, I think Trotz is the exact blueprint that they need to follow. They need to get a coach like that is going to take, they're going to have good goaltending, right? There's going to be goaltending prospects. There's going to be Bishop. There's going to be whatever happens with Jimmy Howard. They're going to have good goaltenders. They're going to have very strong defense, because the Sharks are going to lose at least one of them. So we know at least they're getting a number three or number four defenseman from the San Jose Sharks alone. If they can cobble together enough offense with a very strong coach, and I think Julien is there. Mm-hmm. Even a Hitchcock, I don't know if he'd really want to kick that can, but they're going to be a team that I think is going to surprise some folks. Again, depending on the expansion draft, but they're going to have the opportunity to get the pieces needed to at least not be a cellar dweller like we've seen other expansion teams.
Well, I don't think Hitchcock's a bad idea for Vegas, because the way we've been theorizing their expansion picks, it seems like they'll have good goaltending and good defense. Right. And that's right up Hitchcock's alley.
No forwards. I mean, they'll probably have a couple of good forwards, but it feels to me like, I think the one thing when I was doing my expansion draft was like, you're going to have four lines of third liners with like a couple of exceptions on that team.
Yeah.
That'd be my only concern with Vegas. Yeah.
I think they'll be able to cobble together an honest to God second line. First line talent is going to be a barren graveyard. But I think they could cobble together a solid second line. And if you can put three decent, quick skating third lines together with a good defense and good goaltending, I mean, heck, look what Vancouver's doing with far less.
Nope, for sure. Just on the Vegas thing really, really quickly before we move on. We've been talking a lot about them being able to make moves on the trade deadline. So the NHL hasn't got their money yet. They say that it's an issue of just, the paperwork basically going through properly. But until that happens, the thing that also hurts them above and beyond the things that we've already mentioned is they can't go to the GM meetings.
Yeah.
They can't go to the Board of Governor meetings. And when you think with a trade deadline coming up and, you know, and then the expansion draft, you want to be at these GM meetings, especially.
I like how the NHL has put themselves in a position like, we're going to give you this opportunity to acquire assets, not players, but assets, before the trade deadline, but only if you give us our money now. We want our money now, Bill Foley. Like, I like.
Well, yeah, I mean, after John Spino, they kind of have to cover their bases, right?
Yeah.
The only other thing, before I completely get off this Vegas thing forever, until next show, the thing is, to me, the one thing that I don't understand is, wouldn't the Vegas team coming in cause the cap to go down because there's more jobs, thus taking a bigger piece of the player end of the pie?
I don't know.
Me neither.
That's a darn good question.
Me neither. I'm gonna start shaking trees and see what other
smart. I'd like to thank Ian Reed for submitting that question in the viewer mailbag to Technology Writers Room.
And we're gonna get Ian Reed right on that next week.
Okay. So I'm gonna see if I can shake some trees and figure that answer out, because to me, like, though, you're adding jobs, which means you're adding pieces of the pie, which means that the player's side would get smaller, would it not? Like, therefore the cap would go down.
There has to be some logically makes sense.
There's got to be something there to prevent that from happening, right? But
yeah, there's got to be some little known clause somewhere. I don't think the salary cap can contract. I think it would just stay flat.
This is just not really a cap issue, so to speak, but I do know that the league minimum salary does raise next season to $625,000 as part of the CBA.
But the cap is tied to revenue, so it could contract. I mean, I think the players would stop it from contracting. It might stay flat, but it absolutely can contract because it's all tied to revenue. Mm-hmm. Last point, Henrik Lundqvist becomes the 12th goalie in the NHL history to win 400 games. Yay.
I like quickest to do so.
And yeah, for a guy, you know, is, you know, Henrik Lundqvist, I think the saddest thing was just how kind of, you know, you just kind of wish he was in a better situation. I mean, and there's a couple of teams where obviously he had a chance to win, but it's one guy who, you know, you just wish would have had a better chance to win at some point. When he was a little more spry.
Well, I loved Henrik Lundqvist. I saw him quite play a little bit, you know, just through online videos and whatnot for Vestra Frölunda. I kind of spit that out, Frölunda. But the thing of it is, I'm trying to remember what age he came into the league, because I think he was an older rookie.
He was 23 first season.
So. Not like super old, but still older than some goaltender.
That's about right for a goalie, no?
I would say that's actually a little young for a goalie.
Really?
Yeah.
Right.
They're youngish. I mean, it's not like, you know, poor Spencer Martin for the, you know, for the Avalanche, who's played on, four teams, right? Mississauga, he was in the ECHL, AHL, now the NHL.
Well, Lundqvist was old enough and obviously good enough that he didn't ever spend any time in the minor leagues. He came straight from the Swedish Elitserien at the time, straight to the NHL. But 400 wins, I mean, he's, by the end of the season, he's going to be in the top 10. So, I mean, do you think he's in the Patrick Marleau category of, like, he's got these numbers, but he doesn't have the cup? Is he a Hall of Famer, or is Lundqvist a Hall of Famer?
Lundqvist is a Hall of Famer.
Okay. I think he's a Hall of Famer, yeah. I really do. He has the whole New York thing going for him, for starters. Right. And, I mean, he's good. Like,
yeah. I mean, 727 games as a goalie.
Yeah.
I mean, that alone, I think it's just the longevity part. You know, he's got the Vezinas, or Vezina singular, sorry. He's been an all-star. New York City is the very heartbeat of East Coast bias.
Yeah. absolutely. And he's, you know, he's got a decent international record too.
He's got a gold medal and a silver medal.
You know, yeah. So you know, he's got that going for him. And you can't really fault him for the weird combinations of players that have been put in front of him.
Yeah. And he looks damn good in a suit, I must say.
Yeah, a dapper fellow for sure. All right, let's talk about the Eastern Conference a little bit more since we're on that topic. The Eastern Conference playoff picture to me is the most intriguing because, you know, when I looked at it earlier today, I don't know what the situation is now with all the games being over, but when I looked at it earlier today, I mean, you have 7 points separating the bottom, absolute bottom place team from the, you know, from the second wild card. So, I mean, as much as I don't think like a team like the Red Wings are going to come back and make a run out of it, I mean, they could. 7 points isn't insurmountable. What do you guys think of this Eastern Conference? I mean, you got the Islanders, you got the Bruins, the Lightning, and the Panthers. They all seem to be making late pushes. You know, what do you guys think about the Eastern Conference right now?
Well, basically, there's one wild card spot up for grabs because the Rangers are like really, you know, pissed that they're not in the Atlantic Division where they'd be leading the Atlantic Division. And instead, they're a wild card team. But yeah, it's crazy because I was just thinking someone, I think on After Dark in the chat yesterday said, Carolina is second from the bottom in the conference. And I was like, I thought Carolina was doing well, and they haven't been lately. But then all of a sudden I realize it's a lot of it is everyone else caught up from the bottom of the standings. And now everybody's a wild card team.
Yeah, you know? It just doesn't make sense. Like, I think there's certain teams you can leave for dead. I think the Wings are dead. I think the Sabres are dead. I don't take either of those teams seriously, definitely. But
I think New Jersey's dead.
Yeah, New Jersey's dead too. Yeah. Especially today. You know what though? But I mean, but there's still some interesting teams like Tampa Bay. You don't want to just call Tampa Bay dead. They have the pieces.
Right.
If they can get Stamkos back, I don't know what the situation with Stamkos is, but if they get him back, you know, they're scary again.
Remember when the Islanders were god awful?
Yes, I do remember. The moral of the story is fire your coach.
Yeah. But they're 1 point out now.
Fire your coach. If I'm Detroit, I'm firing Jeff Blashill yesterday and hoping for the best. Zach, what do you make of this Eastern Conference mess?
You know, Kevin's right. I think the Rangers are firmly in it. I think they're going to be a wild card team. It really is a jumbled mess. You know, Toronto's sitting right there in number eight right now. Philly's breathing down their neck, but are they breathing their last? They're not playing good hockey right now. You know, the Sharks kind of abandoned Aaron Dell on that, but at least they stole a point. But I'm just not really liking Philadelphia right now. They don't seem like a team with a real strong identity. There's big things wrong with that team. And I can't quite put my finger on it, but you know, after that big 10 game run, they've just kind of imploded. You know, Mason and Neuwirth have not been strong, but they have been for the previous, 2 years that they've been a tandem.
Yeah. Always been Philly though. It's like, they've never, you know, they just, every time they think they have their goalie, it always seems to just fall apart on them.
I know
the Flyers. I mean, man, that pipeline is full, in my opinion, especially
and especially with the goaltending, right? You know, and the never-ending search for the replacement of Ron Hextall, who's now their general manager. You know, you got Carter Hart, you've got Felix Sandstrom, Alex Lyon, they have Anthony Stolarz,
Matej Tomek.
I was just gonna get to Tomek, you know, and those are all outside of maybe Tomek, those are blue chip prospects. Alex Lyon was probably the top UDFA goalie that was available last year. Tampa Bay's got the pieces. You know, Bishop, it'll be interesting to see what they do with him. Vasilevskiy, I'm not sure he's quite ready. We might have a bit of a Jake Allen situation there. Once they get Stamkos and Callahan back, that could be a very dangerous squad. you know, they've got the skill. New Jersey's dead. Buffalo, yeah, they're probably dead. Carolina with the return of the real Cam Ward. One of my followers, Doug Abrams, who's knows all things Canes. The amount of research he's done to point out all the ways that Cam Ward is terrible is exhaustive and definitive. So Cam Ward is killing Carolina. We can stick a fork in that.
Yeah, I can't get behind Buffalo because I can't get behind Robin Leonard. Just can't do it.
Boy, but wouldn't he be fun in a 7-game playoff series? Wow. Who knows what would show up for seven?
That's true. That's true.
Same team? I mean, I think it'd be hilarious. And Detroit needs to tear it down. This is the year that, like, if I'm Detroit, I'm selling Thomas Vanek. Mm-hmm. I would, if I'm Doug Wilson, I'm calling Detroit specifically for Thomas Vanek. Okay. That's a piece that's out there. They're going to lose one of the goalies, you know, in expansion. I think that's a foregone conclusion. It's probably going to be Jimmy Howard. This is the year you really tear it down. You know, they're going to miss the playoffs. You know, own the pain. Get it over with.
Yeah, I agree.
Start the Western version of the Shanna plan, you know, just off to the west of Toronto, and get it underway, because dragging this on another year, it's going to do them no favors.
Yeah. Nope. I mean, they've already dragged this on long enough to begin. Right. Just hobbling this together to try and keep the streak going. I mean, it's, if you're not going to do anything in the playoffs, it's pointless. Like, I understand, like, you want the extra revenue or whatever, but like you're the Red Wings, like, be better.
Yeah. If the Red Wings were a dog, this is now animal cruelty by keeping it alive.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. What about the Leafs? Because the Leafs have kind of been an interesting team to watch all season, but now it seems like they're on a little bit of a skid right now too. What do you guys make of the Leafs? Is this their annual spring collapse, or is this just a bump in the road for them, and they're probably due to the weakness of the Atlantic still playoff bound?
Yeah, I think it's the division that they play in. Those head-to-head matchups are pretty nice, because I don't know if you could say annual collapse for them anymore, because this is a completely different team from what they've had.
I agree, but I mean, this is what I hear.
Are they? I would not pick them to be the other team, the other wild card team. But Toronto has put themselves in a pretty nice position this season and growing a tremendous amount under Mike Babcock. I don't know. Toronto's one of those teams that just needs to hold the way they are for this trade deadline. There's not really anybody for them to sell that I can think of off the top of my head. They could buy a defenseman, but again, if they're looking long term, don't get rid of any of those pieces. No.
Yeah, I always hear Nylander being like banned out of the thing, and that makes no sense to me at all. Like, it makes me want to smash. I'm not a Leafs fan, and it makes me want to smash my head against the desk really hard.
Or even moving JVR. You know, it's not like he's 35,
right?
You know, that to me, unless, you know, he's bringing back a Tyson Barrie or a Cam Fowler or some truly excellent defenseman, even that, you know, the talk you hear of that, and then Nylander throwing in those talks, like, for Duchesne.
Ridiculous.
And some of those, I pause and I'm like, has anyone looked at their roster?
I know. Well, because they're always looking, you know, they want that shortcut, though, right? Like, I think
no, Shanahan's not going to allow it.
No, and I agree. I think, you know, I mean, the problem with Toronto is that there's just so much said to sell clicks and papers, and it's hard to really in that market. It's really hard to differentiate the truth from the, you know, Tommy blogger. And obviously, look, you can just say something about the Maple Leafs and people are going to tune in and they're going to click on it. So I get that from a media perspective. It makes sense to, you know, kind of fuel the fire with garbage a little bit at times. If they don't make the playoffs this year, is this year a failure, or would it just be good part of the learning process for the kids.
No matter how this season goes, it's been a pivotal year for the learning process of the kids. It's already a success. Everything from here is gravy.
Yep. Great.
Fair enough. All right. Let's.
Who does get in, and does Boston get in? Because Boston's not a wild card team; they're actually in a divisional playoff spot right now.
Tomorrow, but let me look at the standings here quick.
So, because I still will say Tampa gets in.
Tampa gets in, eh?
But I,
you know, I think of the teams that are out of it, I think Tampa's the only one I would bet on. Yeah. I think they have the pieces. They've got two solid goaltenders. They just need one of them to really stake a claim, you know, either way. I'm selling on Philly. The Islanders.
That's my other team.
Yeah. I think they're going to be in it to the bitter end, but I just really have a hard time betting against a stacked Tampa Bay team that's going to get healthy here in the next, you know, month. And then maybe go into the playoffs on a tear. That's a scary team, you know?
Yeah. I, you know, when it comes to Boston, I'm not sold Boston gets in. Yeah. They're on a hot streak now, but I mean, we just watched our team lose four games in a row. You know what I mean? Like streaks come and go. I think that once this afterglow of this post Julien thing kind of goes away, I think they go back to being what they were.
Yeah.
Now maybe I'm wrong on that. And if I am, so be it. But I don't know. I don't see Boston just ripping through the rest of the division suddenly. I mean, the other thing too, you have to consider too, is like, yeah, they have, you know, they have 64 points. They've played 58 games. They've played four more games than the Leafs. They've played, you know, they played five more games than the Senators.
Yeah. You know, but Tuukka Rask is tough to bet against. I think that defense has enough pieces to hold together. You know, Chara's somehow still out there. And David Pastrnak has been phenomenal for them.
Yeah.
If he can keep knocking those goals in.
One more question before we move on. Do you think that once the NCAA season's over, Charlie McAvoy's suiting up?
Ooh, good question.
I don't know.
I don't know
this year. I think it really depends on if Boston's in a playoff spot and it looks like they are going to get in, I'd say yes. If they're not going to the playoffs, maybe in the off season. I do think McAvoy will be in black and gold next year.
I mean, either way, I mean, you're going to get the kid some experience, right? Like you're going to get his feet wet. He had a really good World Juniors.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's had Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, and he's been good. He's been good in college too.
He's got 3 goals, 13 assists and 28 games for BU.
BU. Thank you.
You know, he's a Long Beach native, but New York. so we get to drop that right in there. You know what? I'm going to go out on a limb and say yes. I think, you know, he went to BU as a true freshman last year. You know, he's won gold medals with at the U18, the U20 level now this year. I'm going to say yes. I'm going to go with yes because they have a need for him. Right-handed power play quarterback, which I always love. You guys hear me talk about those guys constantly. I'm going to go yes. I think Charlie McAvoy is joining the Boston Bruins this year.
Okay. So I got two melee questions that I really want to get to because one question I didn't get to last week. And it's a pretty simple question. Why do teams sometimes wear their white sweaters at home? And I'll answer this quick. There's a couple of reasons for it. In a situation like yesterday when they played the Flyers were wearing their special sweaters, which are white. So in that situation, a team will wear their home colors on the road. The other thing too is like sometimes when you see like an original six matchup, especially sometimes they will switch because for a long time whites were your home jersey.
Yes.
So in some situations when you have like a rivalry game where there's you know, some situation like that. Sometimes they'll swap sweaters just for that reason, just for kicks. And the final reason is sometimes teams just bring the wrong sweaters with them on the road.
That has happened. Oh, yeah. It was Dallas, right?
I think it was LA. Brought the wrong sweaters to San Jose once.
But it happened this year.
Did it? I wouldn't be surprised.
I think it was Dallas. I can't remember who the other team is.
And the second question is kind of a doozy, but we will try and do our best to get through it so we can get to the Barracuda stuff. With Hammond on waivers and the rise of Doug Mick, I'd be interested to hear any discussion. Is it possible to use past performance to predict the future performance for a goaltender? What is the best way to handle a goaltender in a slump when they play such a critical role? And that is from Christine. I know it's a mouthful. Zach, I'll let you take first crack at this since you are the since you dabble in the arts.
And goaltending is the dark arts.
Yes.
And goalie prospects are the darkest of the dark arts. So as soon as you start talking about goalies at the CHL, the NCAA, things like that, what you're doing is you're making educated guesses based really on a lot of things. How's their footwork? Are they overly athletic? Are they positionally sound? Their size, the team in front of them. You really try to talk to them and get in between their ears. You know, goalies range from very normal people to Ilya Bryzgalov. Which we all know is four levels beyond absolute crazy.
Noted astrophysicist. Yeah.
Yes. And he's scared of bears, so it's a good thing I was at the NHL All-Star game, you know. There's a lot that goes on there. And I think what Christine's getting at, and it's an excellent point, is you look at the goaltenders, and the Sharks have seen this, outside of some truly elite netminders, and we talked about Henrik Lundqvist, who I would put in that truly elite category. Carey Price, truly elite category. When it gets after those, it gets into a gray area, and you're going to see, kind of the flip side of that is like a Cam Ward.
Right.
He had that huge run to get Carolina the Cup and then has been nowhere to be found for 10 years. You have Jim Carrey, who played for Washington Capitals, same deal. Steve Mason has had the very definition of a roller coaster career. He was phenomenal coming in with Columbus, was in a barren wasteland of nothingness, and has rekindled that ability with Philadelphia. So the long and the short of it is, and I know I'm going on here, yes, you can look at a goalie's past, and the best way I have found to do that is to understand their mental makeup and look at how quickly they have acclimated to each level. So let's take Arendelle for an example. He stepped in with North Dakota, played well, and quickly acclimated, stole that number one job. He was an undrafted free agent. He went to the CHL, quickly cemented that job. The save percentage stayed up. He moved into the ECHL and AHL. The save percentage stayed in that range. And so he's adjusting to each step of that process. And now what we see is we have a NHL caliber backup that Peter DeBoer refuses to use. But the numbers are phenomenal. As of goalies with at least 10 starts, Arendelle's fifth in the NHL with a .930 save percentage. Interestingly enough, that is right within the range of where he's been at, which is right around a .925 at each step of this journey. Mm-hmm. So that's talking to Arendelle and hearing him, he's about the most mellow person on earth. If he ever raised his voice, it would shock me. I mean, truly ever. So the mental makeup's there. The acclimation at each step has been there. And that's, in my opinion, the best way to look at goalies. And sometimes they just fall off a cliff.
Yeah.
You know, and everyone scratches their head. Even Lundqvist this year, he's lost really the starting role to Antti Raanta for 2 weeks.
Right.
You know, so anyway, sorry about that.
Mental makeup is a go ahead, Ian.
No, I was going to let you go next.
Okay. Mental makeup is a huge part of it. And a lot of it is just seeing the styles and, you know, their technique and whatnot. Because we've talked about Troy Grosnick earlier this year. I can't click on, so this is the best that I can do. For those of you listening on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, etc. I have my lower third back up. But sometimes you don't get to see all the goalies. Like Zach gets to see, Zach and you too, Ian, you guys get to see a heck of a lot more hockey than I do on a minor pro or junior level or whatnot. So sometimes for me, I have to rely on statistical data to gauge a goalie. And especially if you're a casual fan, for example, you have to rely on the stats and what I look for is not necessarily how a goalie is doing this season or even last season, but I'll look at how other goalies have done on these same teams, for example. So I'm going to use the Albany Devils as an example. Last year, Scott Wedgwood had astronomical numbers for the Devils. But when you look at it, and he didn't really have great numbers the year before. And when you look at it, in fact, I think he was an ECHL goalie. When you look at it, this year, Ken Appleby, if I'm not mistaken, is the one who's having outstanding numbers because Wedgwood got injured and is out for the year. The year before that, Keith Kincaid, very solid numbers. So when you're looking at that, it's like, well, maybe it's not the goalie. Maybe it's the coaching structure or the defense that is in front of them or whatnot. Sometimes that's where the stats become misleading, where it's like, oh, this goalie is fantastic. His goals against average is 2.04 and his save percentage is 930. Yeah, but how have the other goalies in the system done? You know, if they're similar, the stats aren't exactly you can't rely on them so much. Andrew Hammond, the year that the Hamburglar exploded onto the scene for Ottawa. What was his save percentage? Like 884 or something like that? Horrible. Then he came in and won like 29 games in a row or whatever it was.
It was 898.
Oh, that save percentage sucks for those of you who don't know. So again, it goes back to what Zach said, where if you can stray away from statistics, especially at the non-NHL level, do it. Just focus on how they look, how they move, what their technique is, if they're scrambling, etc. Because a lot of goaltending is in the head.
Yeah. But yeah, kind of to your point with like Scott Wedgwood, right? His best year was his 20-year-old year with the Plymouth Whalers at a 9.11 save percentage. Other than that, he's bounced between 880 and 903. You know, and then all of a sudden you have this anomaly year, right? And that gets to your point, Kevin, where it's like you've got to look at, you know, the team in front of him. Is it just hot? You know, some goalies just have a super hot year. Troy Grosnick, you know, this year for the Barracuda is a from a scouting perspective, it's concerning. You know, I've talked to him. We've all read about the amazing amount of work he did this summer. But it's cause for pause because it doesn't fit with the long-term, you know, narrative. And, you know, goalies can make a couple tweaks and all of a sudden the whole game rounds out.
Yeah.
You know.
It's like pitchers in baseball. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, I think for me, I will look at, again, kind of like a merge of what Zach and Kevin have both said. I mean, I definitely look at numbers. I look at, you know, is there a consistent level of play in all levels of hockey? Alex Daylock completely falling apart didn't surprise me at all when you looked back at his body of work getting to the NHL. Andrew Hammond doesn't surprise me at all that he's now on waivers after, you know, he had that one hot streak. But before that, you know, he was, you know, his better numbers, like back in Bowling Green, I mean, he had a 917. It's all right. But doesn't scream, you know, this is going to be an elite goalie in the NHL.
917 is a decent NHL save percentage, but at the college level, usually it's far higher for the goalies that make it.
You know, and then even in the NHL, like a 9-10. I mean, it's not a terrible save percentage, but again, the AHL, you'd want to see, you know, a little bit higher. So the fact that, you know, he's completely kind of fallen off a cliff doesn't really surprise me, because if you go look at his previous numbers, they're not really all that sexy at all. You know, and this is a guy who also, at the same time, you have to take age into consideration. Andrew Hammond's a 29-year-old goaltender. He's not getting any better than, you know, it wasn't like there was a whole lot of ceiling left for him when he had that, when he had that hot, you know, that hot run for the Senators. And he's not the first then goalie, and he won't be the last that goes on a hot streak and then fades into obscurity.
Rob Amon in the chat, I don't really know where to go with this, but you do bring up a great point that Thomas Greiss is an excellent rebound story from
the
start of his career. But Christine, if you guys want to touch up on that, cool. Christine has a follow-up question. Is Martin Jones going to be an elite goalie?
Martin Jones on track to be, I don't know if I want to go elite, but he's on track to be good. I don't know if I'd say elite. I don't think he's going to be this franchise goalie everyone thinks he is, but I think he's going to be good enough.
Yeah, I agree, Ian. I think he's going to be an above average goaltender. I would put him in the top 15 in the NHL. I think that's a really safe bet. But you're truly elites, you know, in that top three that are able to Henrik Lundqvist your team into the playoffs, despite your GM's best efforts to the contrary.
Right.
I'm not sure. And even Thomas Greiss, you know, he had that rough year with Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. but, you know, he's a player. You look at his, you know, I brought up his stats here. In the Dell, he had a 936, 926, you know, so that's one league. Went to the AHL, had a really rough year. 1 year, 912, 912, 860.
But those Worcester. Yeah, but again, those Worcester teams were
huge. They were terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then once he got into with, you know, San Jose, and in the NHL, you're looking 915, 920, 925, 922, and then that one 908 year.
Yeah.
So I think Greiss is I think he's a good goalie that's just never gotten a fair shake, much like Halak, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But
Greiss just wasn't going to get games behind Nabokov, period.
Right. Oh, no, and rightfully so.
Right. So I don't know. I'm not super surprised that Greiss, like, I've never been a Greiss as a starter thing. And obviously now I'm kind of eating crow on that. I always thought he was going to be, you know, a very, very good serviceable backup, but never much more. And, you know, I'll eat my words a little on that because he has come around, especially on an Islanders team that's not very good.
And then the Martin Jones example, I think that's exactly kind of gets to a bit of my example. You look at his time with Calgary, his save percentage was a 911, 915, 919. Goes to the AHL, 919, 919, 924. Has that excellent year with the LA Kings in 13-14 at a 934 save percentage. A lot of that had to do with their defense. But we're seeing the same kind of player now where the Sharks have, you know, he's at 918 last year. He's at 915 this year. So kind of, again, at each step he has brought a similar style and adjusted quickly. That's the key. You know, you want to be in a position for 2-3 years as a goalie tops before you're taking that next step.
Would I rather have, I'd rather have Jones than Cam Talbot.
Oh yeah.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that 'cause he's the guy in teal today. All right, so let's move on. Let's get to some Barracuda talk so we can let all these wonderful people out of here.
Thanks for sticking with us.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for sticking with us. Obviously, Barracuda on an 8-game winning streak now with victories against the Gulls, the Condors, and the Rain. Zach, what can you tell us about these games?
They're good. Now, I mean, it's next man up. you know, they've had kind of this rotating cast of characters. LeBanks come back for a little bit. He's come back for a game or two here or there. They inserted Zach Sortini and Buddy Robinson in Grand Rapids on that trip. You know, Armalis has gotten a start and somehow once again just finds a way to win. Mm-hmm. You know, if wins and losses were all we trash for goaltenders, Armalis, I think, would be getting a little bit more play. But Grosnick's been phenomenal, you know, all season. And he's really, I think, locked down and frankly earned that number one spot. The defense is playing really well as a unit. There's gaffes, but Grosnick's playing well enough to bail them out. You know, they're doing a good job of keeping a lot of traffic out from in front of them. It's kind of one and done shots for the mm-hmm. most part, not a lot of scrambles. It'll be interesting to see what Jacob Middleton, what his injury will mean, because with Team Heat out, he's made a really nice pairing with Joakim Ryan, and I think he's been an underrated 20-year-old for the Barracuda this year. So he's been nicked up, and Michael Brzezinski, you know, had a good game tonight. He had two assists, but I think he's yeah, exactly. And you know, he's a player that you're just not sure what you're going to get shift to shift. And I think this young team with the solid defense that they've built, you know, around Grosnick's good play, all of a sudden Dan Kelly is the bearded wonder. You know, he had two assists yesterday. He had a goal and assist tonight. Had definitely some spring in his step. Bring some snarl back there. He had, you know, not the fleetest of foot.
No. But
Dan Kelly plays Dan Kelly hockey. After the game, we talked to him, and he even laughed. He goes, "I don't know how I'm scoring these points. I don't care. I'm there to be physical. I'm there to play defense. I'm there to clean creases." And, you know, right. That's the mindset you want to hear from a professional hockey
Dan, player. Dan Kelly also was there to make Michael Brodzinski's brother Johnny miserable by throwing him into the boards twice during the game. That was pretty hilarious. Yeah, Kelly had a good game tonight, I thought. And I don't know how he wasn't the game's first star. I was actually screaming that he needed to, you know, risk the suspension and get in a fight in the last minute just to get his Gordie Howe hat trick. And then he actually looked like he was trying to instigate almost something there with 2 minutes left, which I thought was hilarious. So,
but I like how like all the kind of like the bruisers are kind of getting on the board. Like we saw like John McCarthy, we saw him get a couple of goals going there. Like he seems
to be getting up a little bit.
It's fun watching like some of these guys come up. Like, I mean, it's good too, because I think O'Regan's kind of cooled off a touch. I mean, he's still getting the assists here and there, but he's not exactly finding the back of the net as often as he was earlier in the season. Goldobin just continues to be great. Like if
he scored again tonight.
Yeah. I mean, and this is a guy who, if you would have told me like, you know, would you consider Goldobin for a call up to the NHL at the start of the season? I would have just laughed on camera for 5 minutes and that would have been the end of the segment. But
I think that happened.
It probably did happen. I'm such a jerk. But that really speaks to, I think, how much Goldobin's really come along this season.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought up Middleton, because I think Middleton has looked pretty strong. And the one thing that I like about Middleton is, sure, he's not that much faster than Dan Kelly, to be honest. He's pretty much a defensive defenseman. But he picks his spots to jump up in the play and try to contribute offensively. And when he does it, they're not bad times. Like, it's not puck going the other way because he made a bad pinch. Like, he seems pretty cerebral when I watch him.
Yeah, a really solid decision-making for Middleton is the thing that I think impresses me the most with him. For a guy who really, you know, if you don't watch the games, I mean, some people are like, Middleton, who the hell's Middleton?
Yeah.
Talk about Bergman.
By the way, tonight's game, obviously, we're following the Barracuda game tonight against the Ontario Reign. Finally, I got to see them beat the Reign. So exciting. But there was also a decent crowd in the building this evening. And sure, there's a lot of empty seats in this photo, for example. But you also have to remember that this is an NHL-sized arena. So this is a pretty good crowd. And it was all the way around that lower bowl, just like this. It wasn't just one side of fans. So kudos to everybody coming out. I was not at the Evgeny Nabokov bobblehead night, which, you know, hands down, it was the highest attended game in the team history. I will also say that all those fans left by the end of the first period. This crowd stayed the entire game and watched the Barracuda play very well. And it's nice to see, again, that there is fan support for this team if the team chooses to go after them. I'm glad that the team pulled out a great victory. And my friend Kathy Wolf, who I believe is watching this evening, hello Kathy, new fan of the show, but she was saying that, like, when the players were raising their sticks to salute the crowd at the end of the game, they had a little more excitement to it because they recognized, like, my god, there's more than 240 people at this thing.
Yeah, I mean, the SCP Center is too big. I mean, I'm not a fan of little league and, you know, minor league hockey in NHL size arenas. In some places it works, but in other places, like, I don't understand why it just looks so bad. And I think it hurts too, because I think when you're in a big arena like the SAP Center watching an AHL game, you know, that crowd, if you had an appropriate sized venue for that crowd, that would have looked like a pretty decently full arena, which kind of, I think, would help, you know, kind of raise buzz for it, because you're like, yeah, look, a lot of people are here. Whereas, like, even though that's a good crowd for a Barracuda game, it still looks like, well, I don't need to take this seriously, because it doesn't look like, you know, people really give a damn.
Yeah, the attendance, I'm looking at the game sheet. We've got game length, attendance, 5,704.
But
and the game lasted 2 hours and 16 minutes.
As opposed to, I don't know if there were 5,000 people there, but as opposed to the games where there, you can tell there are no more than 300 people there, and they say attendance 4,100. I mean,
does that include the players and the staff? And
yeah, this was a lot closer to 5,000 than I was thinking, like 3,300. So
I think the earlier game on a Sunday helped. You know, the late starts on a Sunday when the kids got school the next day and, you know, people got work, things like that. That's tough. The Sharks playing early, I think, also, you know, helped kind of clear out the day. So folks woke up and had their coffee, watched the Sharks, and went about their day and caught a Barracuda game. So it was a good crowd.
It was a good crowd. And the Barracuda now are actually second overall for, if you look at points percentage, they are second overall in the league with their points percentage, which is what determines playoff seeding, which is huge for them. And they definitely, you know, they put more distance between themselves and Ontario. And actually, I think they've now been jumped by San Diego second in the division. So,
And the thing, I think the most exciting thing about the team this year is what we talked about just not too long ago here, the defense, because the defense was the sore spot on the team going into the year. And the penalty killing is number one in the AHL, and goaltending has been good. Grosnick, I think, still leads the league in shutouts, if I'm not mistaken. He was an all-star at the very least. So the forwards have been great, but so have all the other pieces that were dark spots going in. And even this also goes to players, for example. Hockey Jerk and I were discussing this evening the growth of Nikita Yevpilov from the start of the year till now, and how Yevpilov was viewed as a one-dimensional, you know, playmaking, scoring forward who shied away from anything physical whatsoever. And now he's out there grinding on the boards, and he's excelling in all the areas that were a problem for him a year ago. And so guys like him, you know, that makes the team even more exciting when you're seeing everybody develop. Hello?
Hello?
Oh, it's just me and you, apparently. So,
sorry, I was waiting for... Okay.
So yeah, I flipped back to the screen and Ian was gone. So,
me and Kevin are going to try to steady the ship until the captain gets back. So Rob had a couple questions in the chat. Should Matis Armalis go back to the ECHL? And should Riley Gill be promoted to the Barracuda? I think Armalis is right where he needs to be. He's played professionally in Sweden for a number of years.
Yes.
The acclimation to the professional game with very structured defensive assignments, similar to what he would see if he was ever to be called up to the Sharks, is what is needed. Riley Gill is on a ECHL-only contract. He is not San Jose Sharks property, so he would have to sign a PTO, et cetera, just to get up to to that level. And probably Jake Kupski, who's down... Murray. No,
Jamie Murray
is down with Allen, and he is San Jose Sharks property, so he would probably get the call. Like, let's say Troy Grosnick has a family emergency and he's going to be gone for a weekend series. Armalis would step into the number one, and Jamie Murray would likely come up and get backup duty. That's the more likely scenario than Riley Gill, who's kind of been a mainstay with Allen last couple of years.
And the thing is, you mentioned Riley Gill. He would need to be signed to a pro tryout. Riley Gill is also 32 years old. So it's safe to say he's an ECHL goalie, and that's it.
You're not a prospect at that point.
There is no NHL potential there. So for the Sharks to want to grow their goalies, they're going to boost Jamie Murray up.
Right.
Yeah. No matter how the season's going, because
Troy Grosnick missed some games with injury earlier in the season.
Yeah, and Murray was the backup.
Right.
There was also another question in the chat from Puck Guy. He asked about the AHL's longest winning streak, and could it be at Solar for America Ice, because that game on, I believe it's March 1st against Texas, is being moved to the practice facility in favor of Bon Jovi. The answer to that is an emphatic no. 8 games is awesome. An 8-game winning streak for the Barracuda is awesome. It ties the Sharks' minor league affiliate record for wins in a row. However, I know that the Lehigh Valley Phantoms held the streak for a long time, but the Norfolk Admirals, that year that they literally had points, I'm pretty sure literally in 30 straight games, they hold that record. And I think it's 18 wins in a row. And then I think they had they were like 28-0 or 27-0-3 in their last 30 games to end the season before they went to the Calder Cup. So, and their goaltender was Dustin Dukarski, who is now on the San Diego Gulls.
There you have it.
Yeah. I thought their win streak was 28.
Could be, you know what? Could be. Maybe I'm getting it instead of points, it's wins.
I thought, the 11-12 season, I think they won 28 games.
That's
right. In a row.
I'm going to have to look it up. I just know that John Cooper, John Cooper, had his team rolling at the end of that year, and there was nobody stopping him.
So let's quickly, here, end on this note, because we've been meaning to hit the last 2 weeks. So the AHL is going to see some relocations next year. What's going on, Kevin? This is your baby.
I'm sorry. Yes, 28 game winning streak for the Norfolk Admirals in 11-12. Sorry, Ian. What was the question?
I'm just saying I want to just finish out on the potential, or not even the potential, the actual relocations for next year.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yes. So a couple of weeks or last week or whatever, there were some announcements regarding relocations. It's long rumored were that the Binghamton Senators would be moving to Belleville, Ontario next year. That is confirmed. They'll be the Belleville Senators. But the Albany Devils are now going to move to Binghamton, which was a little bit of a surprise to me. And then poor old St. John's, the Ice Caps. St. John's has a very good fan, very solid fan base, but they're out in the Atlantic time zone, way off in Newfoundland. And so
with Atlantic weather,
huh?
With Atlantic weather,
Yeah. So it's just, it's hard for NHL teams to want to be in Newfoundland. So they're moving their team to Laval, Quebec. They just announced, or they just revealed their team jerseys and logo in Laval. They're going to be called the Rocket after famed Pucknology podcaster Rocket Backhander, of course.
That's right.
And
sounds legit.
Or some other Rocket Richard guy. One of those two. But the jerseys are pretty sweet. The Rocket is weird to me just because it's not a rocket. It's a giant R, but I still think it looks sleek. It looks nice. And then people have asked a few times about the Vegas Golden Knights situation with the AHL. The last rumor that I mentioned was them moving to sharing an affiliation with the St. Louis Blues with the Chicago Wolves next season. But the thing of it is that the Blues contract with the Wolves expires after this year, and the Blues were rumored to be moving their to start up a new team in Kansas City, taking the structure of how the Sharks have a team here. According to Kurt Price, when I talked to him last week, that fell through. So I don't know what's going on. And then now the AHL, I can't remember who runs the AHL, but he came out and said, it looks like there's going to be expansion next year. So to be continued.
To be continued. All right, everybody, that is our show for the week. I know we went long because we always go long, but we're trying to make sure that we, you know, cover the stuff that you, the people, want us to cover. We are doing a survey that people have filled out, and I appreciate the time that people took to fill it out. I will throw the link into the show. It'll be on the blog tomorrow. Also, I've retweeted 100 times on Twitter. I believe it also is the pinned tweet on the Pucknology account. So if you'd like to take the survey, we would absolutely appreciate it, because it helps us basically try and, you know, center on the things that you want to talk about, and hopefully we babble less about the things that you don't want us to talk about. And then we, you know, maybe have an hour show instead of an hour and a half show. Maybe.
Or a better hour and a half show.
I personally could talk all night about hockey. But I do try to be mindful of the fact that on our audio stream, you can find this show. You can find Pucknology After Dark, which is our post-game show. You can find The Pucknologists, which is our audio-only recap show. You can find that all on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and a million other places. And if you can't find it on your podcatcher, let me know and I will make sure it gets there. You can also subscribe to us right here on YouTube if you're watching live, or if you're catching this on the audio stream after the fact, definitely, you know, subscribe to us on the YouTube channel. The more subscribers we get, the more cool features we get back from YouTube. So that would be super, super awesome. And, you know, subscribe to the other stuff as well, the Pucknology After Dark channel. And you can find these guys on Twitter as well, and I'll let them tell you where they can find them. So
plus if you subscribe to our
coming in,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Plus, if you subscribe to our channel and you miss an announcement regarding weird Monday Pucknology Writers Room or weird 8:30 start time or whatever, you subscribe to us, you'll get a notification on your mobile device that will say Pucknology Writers Room is starting live right now, and you won't miss an episode. So definitely check that out.
That's true. Absolutely true. Kevin, where can they find you since you ran over me?
I'm at KevinLacey22. You can find me on Twitter and some other media outlets. Once again, because I did it on After Dark, happy birthday, Curtis Brown. You're my guy. And yeah, you can also find me wearing a turtleneck at the Barracuda games from time to time. AO and Christine, I thought we were going to meet up this evening.
I heard that she met a certain bear.
Oh,
yep. So I was very pleased to meet Christine in person finally. So got to say hi to her. Also saw Kathy again. So good to see some Pucknology viewers and listeners at the Barracuda game today. So thank you so much for watching and listening and asking great questions. You can find me on Twitter at Zach the Bear, ZakkTheBear, or I'll spell it for my Canadian friends, ZAKK. Got a whole lot coming out, Barracuda stuff, shark stuff. We're getting into prospect season, so I'll have a lot on the 2017 NHL entry draft. And so check me out there. Follow for all the great stuff while I retweet all of Ian's little comments at me. And
that's true. There's a lot of chatting.
There's a lot of chatting. So come on and join us.
Yeah, definitely. Check Zach's work out on the Hockey Writers, Dauber Prospects, and I'm missing something. Hockey, what am I missing?
Hockey Profits.
All right. And I am Ian Reed. You can find me at iReadPucknology. You can find me on pretty much all the Pucknology shows except for the Pucknologists, although I do show up there on occasion unannounced. You can also, if you want to find further Barracuda coverage that I do, you can find it on Fear the Fin. Aside from that, guys, have yourselves a good night. Thanks for watching as always. And we are out of here.